Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show. Levi Solicitors bring you this one, the TSB Guide to Max Gradle. Dan here with Michael and with Rob as we offer you 10% discount on your legal fees. levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball.
We're going to get on to Max Gradle's professional negligence against Bristol in a bit.
Was there some dispute resolution involved?
Was that the role of Beckford and Doyle? I'm not sure exactly who was trying to resolve that at the time.
But that's
definitely an advert.
And if the owner of a business was asset stripping and just selling off anything that wasn't nailed down, could they deal with that probably?
Maybe help.
Let's assume so, shall we? levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Max Gradle is the subject today. This one coming out on the day that his Ivory Coast, the Cote d'Ivoire, are playing a friendly in Lens.
Where?
Lens, as Moscow would say. I believe that's in France.
Paris.
Against Marcelo Bielsa's Uruguay. So it's nice to see like the worlds colliding like that. But yeah, it's probably long overdue to have a little chat about Maxi, because we still hold him very dear in our hearts, don't we? And I think we were all kind of quietly pleased when Ivory Coast won AFCON recently.
Rob hated it. Max Gradle will be one of your sort of childhood heroes almost, won't he, Rob? Given your age?
Yeah, he was part of that team that was very lovable, and it was subsequently completely heartbreaking to see it just sold off very cheaply. But yeah, while it was there, it was very, very fun, and Max Gradle was a big part of that.
So he signed, it was initially on loan, wasn't it? 1 month loan, October 2009. And he came from being this kind of player just milling around in Leicester's reserves or whatever, to being this amazing flair player who we all loved and we all wanted to keep. And for whatever reason, Leicester let us.
Yeah, I mean, he played for them, and it was Nigel Pearson in charge, I think, at the time. And he'd had a decent number of games for him, but they obviously just didn't rate him particularly highly. And I think it's probably also fair to say that when he did arrive at Leeds on loan, most people went, who? Because we did have quite a few loan players around this time. It was during the era of the emergency loan window, which was not an emergency at all. It was just a way of getting people outside of transfer windows. But he signed on the same day as Sam Vokes, who people had heard of. And so the two of them went straight into the squad. But it was not announced, as far as I'm aware. I think it was just
kind of happened.
You sort of turned to Pelham Road and it was like, who's on the bench? Oh, yeah. New people.
Well, so was that part of the allure when it came to Gradle, do you think? The fact that he went from this position of obscurity and was just dropped into the team to making an instant impact. And that shouldn't happen. And you think that as soon as he makes the instant impact, Leicester are going to go, oh, well, you can't have him. We're going to keep him.
You kind of forget how bad a lot of those games in League One were, where it could just be essentially 90 minutes of head tennis in the centre circle. I seem to remember going to Ellen Road, and that was kind of the case a few times. Whereas he would, well, quite often come off the bench, I guess, and was just immediately quick and exciting, and it was like, why is this guy? It was like that whenever a really good player turned up at Leeds, you're like, why is he playing for us at this level? But he was basically playing for us because he was good mates with Paddy Cisnarbo, and it was Cisnarbo who convinced Grayson to sign him. Grayson wasn't interested, hadn't made an approach to Leicester, and Gradle just kept pestering Cisnarbo, who kept pestering Grayson, and eventually was like, fine, we'll have a look at him for a month, I guess.
Ah, I never knew that, you know.
And it was, his debut as well, he comes on that day, and it's quite a memorable game, I guess. It's the one where we beat Norwich in the last minute, because there's a miscued goal kick. Beckford latches onto it, kind of scuffs the shot, but it goes in, and it was a chaotic sort of an evening. But Gradle in that came on and actually made quite a big impact on it. I can vaguely recall it at the time, but I looked back at the BBC's minute by minute. He's only on for, comes on the 79th minute, and he's mentioned absolutely loads, just winning free kicks, causing him problems. And that was kind of his role to begin with. Obviously, then establishes himself in the first team, but at this point, he just comes on as like the chaos factor.
Yeah, and there was a real dearth of players who could pick up the ball and run at people and beat people at that point, wasn't there? You just didn't get it in the EFL at that point. Not to that extent, anyway.
Yeah, I suppose he was a different type of player to Snoddy, wasn't he, at the time? Snoddy, I guess you would never call quick, but they sort of played in tandem very, very nicely.
And I guess him and Snodgrass as well fall into the same bracket of players who, and I wonder if this is the reason why, talking about this journey you went on at Leeds, and we'll talk about Bristol in a second, but essentially being sort of the diamonds in quite a lot of shit at that time, just players who you could latch onto from an emotional point of view, in much the same way that we love seeing what Georgie Root is doing more recently. And I'm not saying he's in among shit, but he stands out because he's got this unknowable kind of flair that allows him to pick up the ball and run with it. And it is a rare quantity, that, isn't it? Especially like in a side that's kind of built on possession and passing. Somebody just who can pick it up, and what, you're just going to run past people, are you, and beat people?
And to get him more or less for free, I mean, 200, I mean, I suppose in debates, 200 grand was a massive fee, given how little we used to spend on players. But in terms of bargains, you can't really get much better than him, yeah. I don't think, for what he gave us, and for that to arrive for that kind of a fee.
I said it was the Yeovil game, wasn't it, later that month, when he scored, came off the bench, 4-0, and we were singing Grayson, Grayson, sign him up.
I think we were singing that more or less from his yeah. debut, I think. I think that might, he may have even first started on his that 10 minutes against Norwich. People have got a glimpse of him and were like, yeah, all right, good. But except for once, we actually did sign someone who was good on loan, and then they turned out to be good beyond that, because that's the traditional Leeds pattern, isn't it?
It's really, really weird that Leicester didn't want to keep him, because I was looking back and there were some stories at the time that it was like Leicester issue, hands-off warning about a permanent deal. And Gradle did actually return to Leicester for a week. But then it was just basically like, no, I just got back to Leeds, it's fine. Like, cool, we'll have him, that's great.
I'll pay to go, yeah. I'll pay to go. And he scored some pretty vital goals in the run-in that season, didn't he?
No, he did. I mean, towards the end of the season, it was, again, history has almost painted Beckford as the hero of this season, because he gets the goal on the last day, gets the goal against Scum. But in between those two things, he's out of the team. People are criticising him quite a lot. He's requested a transfer around the turn of the year. So there's a lot of difficulty in that period. And Gradle, who's been brought in as a winger, ends up playing as a striker. And he's, I suppose, the catalyst for getting us back on track after we have that horrible bit where we lose four in a row and it looks like we're completely leading it in. Richard Naylor scores a couple as we win at down at Yeovil, and then Gradle's in the team and he then has a little run of goals, and it gets us back on track to the point where we do get to the final day and it's in our hands and it's dead simple and we just need to beat Bristol and for nothing insane to happen and we will finally be promoted.
And in terms of the promotion, you know, we don't need to repeat necessarily or go into that much detail about what happened against Bristol, but not that one, it. Lost, he completely lost his shit. But given that we did do it in the end, and you know, from like, for example, we did the promotion summer special, didn't we? Talking about this and got the oral history from it, and knowing that he was under the, basically in the dressing room, hiding under the benches, crying because he thought he'd completely blown it.
Yeah, it was Andy Hughes who told that story, and it's funny how, because me and Moscow did those interviews, everyone sort of remembers it a little bit differently. Like Andy Hughes was a bit like, no. He knew he'd let us down, but we knew it was sort of time to stick together and everything. And I think I chatted to Simon Grayson, and he was like, yeah, I got in at halftime and it was fucking mayhem. It was like everyone was just arguing, trying to kill Max. And it's like, yeah. But he'd obviously knew what a fuck up it was. And he did subsequently say that's why he played like a crazy man the following year, because he knew he had a lot of making up to do. Albeit at full time, he looked like he didn't have a care in the world. He was just dancing around the pitch, wasn't it?
It's interesting that he felt like he had sort of an emotional debt to us in that regard.
The thing is with Gradle, he did have a bit of madness in him at this point. I don't think anyone thought he had this much madness in him, but it obviously got to him quite a bit. And it's weird, in the stadium that day, people were annoyed at the ref rather than Gradle, is the way I remember it.
For not letting him run amok.
He was sent off for a kind of an off-the-ball thing, wasn't he? It was like an off-the-ball stamp and in the ground. the consensus was that it was probably an AFL conspiracy. Having watched it back, I mean, he doesn't do much, does he?
No, it was Daniel Jones, wasn't it?
Yes.
Bristol Rovers player who kind of wound him up and made a meal of it. But it was Grayson, as they were walking off at halftime, found himself next to Daniel Jones and just says, good luck getting off this pitch if we don't go off.
Which was a masterstroke as well. If you watch the full-time whistle on that one, which I think he's still doing the rounds on YouTube or whatever, he has come over to the wrong side of the pitch because I think he was the fullback on the far side, wasn't he? So he should have been the left back. He was on the right side of
vice versa. He's basically got 1 foot down the tunnel as injury time is being played. Yeah. But it's one of those that you look back and you go, it probably is a red card. But also, let him off. He's Max Gradle. He's only young.
I'm going up. Be nice.
Let him stay on the pitch for the promotion party.
But yeah, it was like a man possessed in that second season, wasn't he? Completely just optimum Max Gradle, which unfortunately then makes him attractive for Ken Bates seeing the pound signs.
Yeah, I mean, you say he was great that season once he gets in the team because he's obviously suspended for the start of that season, which makes it a little bit difficult for us to get going. And I was looking back at this. I kind of forget how badly we started that season. There were some awful games in it before Gradle really kind of gets into gear. Like we've managed to lose at 5-2 at Barnsley. We've lost 4-6 against Preston. We've been done 4-0.
The John Parkin game.
Yeah, we've been done 4-0 by Cardiff. So, and we're mid table, and it feels like we're not going to go down, but it feels like we're just going to be, you know, have a steady mid-table season as a newly promoted team.
Do you know what? It's looking back on it as you described this, and it's not that long ago. It's within living memory. It feels like a lifetime ago. Everything pre-Bielsa feels like a lifetime ago anyway, but you forget how much of a grind the Championship is when you're coming in from the League One route.
Even and seeing the attendance against Norwich, because Norwich was
the first game.
Were our promotion... Yeah, Gradle's first game there. Well, they won the league, didn't they, that year? They were promotion rivals, but under 20,000 there.
Right.
You just think, God, we'd so easily sell that out now.
Yeah.
But just at the time, there was...
I mean, football's changed, and obviously the scale of ambition has changed, hasn't it? We've been in the Premier League, and Bielsa sort of reignited all that kind of thing. But yeah, it goes to show how much Bates had poisoned the well, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, that the team at that time, once it crystallised anyway, it was such a fun team that Gradle was a massive part of. That forward line of Becchio, Snodgrass, Howson, Gradle, it was just kind of... For a few months, it did just run riot through the league. And you did think, could this actually happen? And basically, Grayson just wanted to sign a defender, which Bates wouldn't let him. But, you know, so that didn't quite work out. But Gradle ended up winning the Player of the Year, both the club's Player of the Year and the Yorkshire Evening Post Player of the Year. And Phil Hay, who interviewed him for The Athletic, he talks about how when he went to give Gradle the award, you often find footballers aren't really that asked about these things. But you could tell it really meant a lot to him. And I think when he interviewed him, what is it he said... it was an amazing year. I was totally in love with football and the club, totally in love with everything. And it should have been a real feel-good story that of going back up with that team again. Mm-hmm. But at that time, we weren't allowed nice things, were we? At least not for very long.
Hearing stuff like that, that's why we still love him. I think that's why we still carry him in our hearts, isn't it? The fact that he went out and lived it and redeemed himself the season after. It's a redemption arc.
Yeah, and it was a fun period. I know that the season kind of started badly, ended badly, but there was a bit in the middle, which maybe is what you kind of hope for is just like a bit of a season at least where you can think, you can dream a little bit and be like, I think this might happen. Like there's a very real chance we're going to go up, we're going to just bounce up again here.
And it's him as well. It's him that scores the two goals against Warnock's QPR just before Christmas, who QPR ended up walking away with the league really. But Gradle scores twice. We win 2-0 and we're second going into Christmas. And you think, bloody hell, we're in a real chance here with a really good, fun team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit we lose once in 4 months in the middle of that. Started badly. We lose at Cardiff because
that's what happened.
That's just what used to happen. I feel like are we kind of beyond that now? I feel like we've managed to break that, haven't we?
We've broken a lot of these jinxes and curses, haven't we? It feels
like for years it was like, obviously, yeah, we'll lose at Cardiff because O'Leary's team lost there. So for some reason, we have to just keep doing it. I don't know. I don't know why it seems
like
to be a
it's like a permanent
thing.
Curse on the kingdom, isn't
exactly.
it?
I know Rob Earnshaw's not playing for him anymore, but he'll probably do well.
Yeah.
Probably beat Ian Hart for pace.
Kumas will be hovering somewhere around watching in the stands.
Kavanagh there to with his grey head ready to score. But yeah, that run of thinking like, bloody hell, we're going to do this. But then, we turns out we're not that good at defending.
Yeah, and the problem
which we kind of knew all along.
And I was saying, touching on the point I made before, the problem with not going up then is that we can't have nice things at Leeds because, I mean, as we know, the reality of being in the Championship now is you have to sell to survive to try and balance the books, don't you? Because the tightness of FFP and PNS, whatever it is, that, you know, it feels like the EFL is trying to get its house in order in that regard. Far from a perfect system, but that's the reality of being there. Whereas it always felt like you could kind of cling on to these better players back in this era. I think that's one of the key differences between then and now. And to see all the good players just gradually drift away and be sold to pay for whatever shite Bates needed to pay for.
We didn't cling for long, did we? I think it was an era of we happened to strike upon a good side that we'd not paid any money for. And the sensible thing to do would have been to, well, we didn't pay really anything for Snodgrass, for Gradle, for Becchio. This is a rare opportunity to just put a few players around them and go up on the cheap. On the cheap turned out to be, you
even,
know,
even cheaper than that.
Turned
yeah,
out to be
yeah,
optimistic, because actually we went, well, all of a sudden, I think Phil still told this tale of Snodgrass going in and them saying, oh, we see you as a £7 million player or whatever, we're not going to let you go for less. And he was like, well, do you fancy paying me like I'm a £7 million player then? And they were like, oh, no. No, we don't. That doesn't work that way. We just want you as an asset more than anything.
See, now you said that, I immediately pictured Sean Harvey, which has immediately drawn my mind onto the Wrexham documentary and how furious I feel every time I see his face on that.
Still not watched that, but...
For that reason.
His presence on it can't make it good.
Mm.
Don't. There needs to be some sort of an expose on Sean Harvey and all of his dreadful deeds across the years, doing Bates' dirty work for him.
But anyway, yeah, so as we know, it was sold. It was right at the end of the window, wasn't it? To about £2.5 million or so it was reported, which is, it was a classic Bates move, wasn't it? Final day of the window and all that.
Well, yeah, Bates had earlier said that, well, Grayson said he wasn't for sale. Bates said, we have no intention of selling our top players unless the offer is so ridiculous it will enable Simon to strengthen his team in many other ways. So then we waited until the end of the window, sold him. It was probably quite cheaply at the time for £2.5 million. And then, yeah, Bates later claimed that he'd been screwed by the agent and the exchange rate. So we actually had no money to spend on the team. He's like, nice one, Ken. That was a very familiar story again.
Yeah, the way Bates managed to explain it, it would have, I mean, it's also not true because it was Bates telling this story.
Yeah.
But you kind of heard it, the explanation and went, well, why don't we just keep him for the rest of the season then? Given we appear to have made no money off this deal. He was like, well,
exchange rates and the agents have been there for cutting it. We're Nunes now. We're a player. That's as good.
But yeah, this was when we entered the era of good player leaves, freebie comes in to replace him, and lo and behold, the team gets worse as a result.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
What did he do after Leeds? There's the question then.
Nothing at all.
No. But again, we've all loosely kept in touch with him and gone, oh, we like him, don't we? And it's an interesting thing. It's an intangible thing when a player captures the heart like they do at Leeds. And so we got the reasons there for why that happened. It's the crucial goals at the crucial time, the redemption arc and all that.
I feel like as well, that era of player, there was a bit of people leaving and you went, yeah, you do right, mate, get out. Save yourself.
You're almost, there's a certain amount of martyring these players, isn't there? Like when Snoddy left, you're like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's fine. I hope you do well because you deserve better than this. You deserve to play in a team with some ambition rather than, you know, with Mika Vaarinen. which sounds like I'm slagging off him, but he was just one of those players who we brought in as like, oh, they seem to be available and might be all right. We'll just try him.
And Maxi went off to Saint Etienne. Quite a lot of appearances there over the 4 years after he left us. 31 goals in 117 appearances and won the cup, which is good for him. And then there can't have been anybody who didn't see this news when you saw that he joined Bournemouth for like 7 million quid and you went, oh, that's not right, is it? It's not fair.
It was around that time that GFH used to kind of tease us going, oh, we might, you know, Gradle is a target. He might have been signing back. And you think, there's no way we could afford him.
Idiots.
But it was when I went to the Euros in 2016 in France, spent some time in Saint-Étienne and was kind of just shouting Max Gradle's name in the face of locals, hoping they might have a flicker of recognition, which they didn't really.
Bonjour, Max Gradle.
Yeah, sort of saying it in different accents. But he did all right there. And then he went to Bournemouth, 7 million quid, but then he knackered his cruciate ligament within the first month. So it never really happened for him there, because I think by the time he returned, they'd just signed more players, which I'm kind of glad Bournemouth didn't get to see the best of him.
They did. I mean, second stint at Bournemouth, wasn't he? He'd had a loan at the kind of pre-Premier League Bournemouth when they were stuck in like League 1, League 2, kind of constantly in the doldrums, weren't they, for ages? But yeah, he'd had a loan there prior to us.
And then, yeah, so back to Toulouse after the unsuccessful stint at Bournemouth, 28 goals in 96 appearances over 3 years. So at least he got his fitness and his form back, which is the good thing. And he ended up captain there, didn't he?
By all accounts, he was their main man. He scored in a relegation playoff to keep them up in their first season. And then they narrowly avoided relegation the second season. Again, he was kind of described as a one-man team. And then I think they were kind of cut adrift in his third season there, which is when COVID hit and the season got ended early. So they were just demoted because they didn't actually finish the season, unlike in England.
Ended up in Turkey alongside Samu Saiz, no less.
I was really happy when I saw this. It just gave me a bit of joy that those two played together. Again, Saiz is another one that kind of, even though he wasn't as good as Gradle really, but he just gives me joy to think about some of his better games.
And the Turkish team names as well. We laughed the other week, didn't we, saying these just sound made up.
There just seems to always be a never-ending list of Turkish teams. I go, never heard of them, but they seem to have bought loads of players.
Sivasspor was the club that he was at first alongside Saiz, and then is now at Gaziantep.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Which sounds like gas on tap. Yeah, so he won winger of the season in 2020-2021.
Didn't know that was a thing.
Nope.
Fine.
And the cup, scoring in the final, no less. More to his international career, I suppose, is how we've been able to follow him since. And he's like a senior statesman now, isn't he, with Ivory Coast.
It was insane looking at the team during the AFCON this year and thinking, bloody hell, Max Gradle is still playing for him. Because he made his debut for the Ivory Coast when he was still at Leeds. And now he's suddenly somehow got 112 caps and he's like their third most capped player. Which, again, I saw that and I just thought, I'm really proud of you, Max, for like going on to have such a good career.
Especially when he's beaten like Drogba, Yaya Toure, who are obviously higher profile players than him. But he's just been this stalwart now, hasn't he? He's been there and he won AFCON in 2015 and won it again for a second time this year, which is quite a gap when you think about trophy wins.
Yeah, and it's not like he's just been on the fringes. He's kind of really contributed to that. He was in the team of the tournament the first time he won it. And then this year, he wasn't really in the team for the group stages, but that was when they were dreadful. I think they ended up sacking the manager. Mm-hmm. And then once he got to the knockout rounds, he got put into the team. He was captain for the semi-final because I think their regular captain was suspended. He sets up a goal in the semi-final and he's starting in the final. And again, like it just proves that he's a really good footballer. It's the thing of during lockdown, they did like a watch along of the Bristol Rovers game with Andy Hughes and Beckford, I think. And the way those pros talk about their teammates who just went on to play at the top flight for however many games, you can tell just how bloody hard it is to do that and to establish yourself at that level. And Gradle's just done that ever since he's left Leeds. He's always played at the top level and contributed.
I think it's nice to see his journey as well from, you know, that young lad who was going mental at a referee in League One to kind of captaining his country and winning trophies, you think. Done all right for yourself there.
Yeah, and it's looking into the background again. Talking about why we love him, and I was asking that question before, and it's when you look into his background. So he's one of 17 brothers and sisters.
No telly in that house.
Well, what I like most of all is like He said, I had a big family in Africa, about 17 brothers and sisters. In fact, he's not keeping count.
It's hard to remember the names, surely, by that.
But, so his mum passed away when he was on loan at Bournemouth, as we were talking about there, the first spell from Leicester. So he's providing for the rest of his family, which makes you understand what kind of informed his desire to redeem himself at Leeds and why he gave his absolute all the season after. Because if your career's on the line and you're providing for the whole family, then the stakes are pretty high, aren't they?
Well, that's why before he'd even joined Leicester, he turned down a scholarship at Arsenal, and it was like Wenger, and they were probably the best team in the country because Leicester had offered him a pro deal, and it was like, well, that's a professional deal. I need to take that, and I'm determined to make the most of it. And likewise, when he was pushing for the move to Leeds, he was offering to pay for his own hotel and use his own money just to get here and make the most of his career, which he's definitely done.
And probably likewise, when he went into his contract negotiation with Ken Bates, who offered him a £10 pay rise, he probably would have been like, well, I'm kind of looking after a lot of people here, and I've done really well, so any chance of paying me a vaguely the going rate? But and it was never going to happen, was
well,
it?
Well, he's spoken about the sort of duality of his emotions at the time when he was first breaking through at Bournemouth, but his mum died at the same time, and he's saying it was strange because at the same time as all that sadness, I was so happy about football. I was playing senior football for the first time at Bournemouth, and I was lucky to have that. It made me happy, even on days when I was crying like mad. Wild, isn't it? What a journey. So you've got, you know, the journey from Ivory Coast to Paris to be with his mum when he was age 10. So you've moved countries there. I mean, so at least you've got the native tongue when you go to Paris. But then to come to England as a teenager is, wow.
You've had an offer to go and see him, haven't you?
Potentially, yeah. I need to finalise it this afternoon, but there could be a spare ticket coming up for this game, Uruguay and Cote d'Ivoire in Lens.
You've got an offer of the ticket.
Just need to sell this one to my wife.
Just a slight logistical issue of being in another country.
Yeah, there is that. And thankfully, I got my passport, my new passport.
Oh, you've got it all lined up then.
Sent through. My old one had expired and I hadn't even realised. So it's a good job I renewed that. So we shall see. I may be able to report back on this in the coming days, but how good would he have been under Marcelo Bielsa?
I think the work rate, along with the skill and the pace, would have been perfect for him.
I think he's the one player from that era, isn't he, that you think, yeah, he'd have been amazing under Bielsa. Snoddy had the skill, not the engine. Likewise, Ross McCormack, you think, loads of skill, but maybe not really the work rate there.
Yeah, Becchio probably can't do the pressing too much, can he? But yeah, Gradle would have been, he'd have slotted in just nicely.
I did like his quotes about Bielsa. He looks crazy and they tell you he's crazy, but he's not. To me, he knows exactly what he's doing. I don't know him, but I know this.
It'll be interesting to see what Gradle does next. I kind of fancy him a step into management now, having kind of come this far with his career. He's surely got enough authority, I think, that he could move into it.
Maybe it's humanitarian work. I don't know. He's got that vibe about him, the fact that he's, I don't know, he seems that way cut out, like he wants to help. If you know what I mean, whether he becomes a spokesman or an ambassador or something like that.
For Leeds?
I was thinking more for Ivory Coast abroad, but you know.
I was going to say, there's still time to get him back at Leeds just for one last season, even if he's just in the reserves. It's the sort of thing that if you were playing Football Manager and you saw him as a free agent, you're like, come on, Max, come home.
So here are your choices then, Max. You can either go represent Ivory Coast at a United Nations committee, maybe, or you could come host one of the lounges at Elland Road. Which do you fancy?
Well, as he says, Leeds are family, Leeds are Leeds. If it was to happen one day, I couldn't be happier. So come on, let's make him happy.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.